And so it begins.
There is a hole in your mind.
What do you want?
No one here is...
Violence solves everything!
Welcome to Violence Solves Everything. My name is Nate, and with me is my current co-host, Andy.
Hello there.
So.
How you doing?
Well, the holidays are over, and the Nightmare of Stupid Bosses is escalating.
Well, I mean, got the plans for the new move going on, so fun there.
Yeah, moving's always a fun little time of life, isn't it?
Oh, what can I say? It's going to be a first time for me, so let's see how that goes.
Worse than you expect. At any rate, we were planning on talking about Alternity, which is a science fiction game. Can do other things, but its focus was sci-fi, and I really enjoyed it. Now, it is an older game. There is a newer version, which we will mention and cover briefly about why you should avoid it, like the plague. But we both are big fans of the previous version, which is really the only full version out there.
Yep. I mean, granted, I have only got to sample two campaigns of the game, but I did like what I got to experience.
So you probably don't have a real depth of knowledge about the system and its history and all the fun things that go with it.
There wasn't really that much time for that in the sessions that I did manage to get into.
That's perfectly all right. It's not a surprisingly well-known system, which actually... I'm not that surprised it isn't that well known. It came out right around, I can't remember if it was 98 or 99 that it released, by TSR during their waning days. They had already been purchased by Wizards of the Coast at this point, but they were still producing things under TSR with the old staff and crew as, you know, basically a subsidiary of Wizards of the Coast. They weren't completely consumed yet. It ran for a couple of years, and then the Wizards of the Coast, having fully taken control of TSR, released a couple of things with their logo on it, and then just dropped the whole thing completely because they were doing D&D 3rd Edition at this point, and they had gotten the license to do Star Wars, and they wanted to release that under their D20 system and not have this split of system mechanics.
Shame.
Yeah, Star Wars murders good stuff. I know a lot of people will be angry about that comment, but if you're an Alternity fan, it's kind of how you feel. So this came out, like I said, by TSR when they were running AD&D 2nd Edition at the time when this released. Unlike TSR's big thing, you know, AD&D, it was not a traditional class-based system.
I mean, you do got your classes in there, but it functions a little bit differently, yes.
Well, yeah, because classes don't restrict you at all. What I'm saying is there were a few different class options. Combat Specialist, Tech Op, Free Agent, Diplomat, and Mindwalker. And Mindwalker was technically an optional one if you were using the psychic rules.
Yes, and while that would be, you know, more inclined towards one of the species out there. The other ones, not so much.
Well, no. Any species could take Mindwalker and be perfectly proficient at it. One species had extra ability if they took Mindwalker. And if they didn't take Mindwalker, they still had some psychic ability, which meant if you were going to use that species, you really kind of needed to use the psychic rules anyway, so there was no reason to exclude it. But here's the big thing. For example, a combat specialist. You pick a weapon type, you get a bonus with it, you get a bonus on initiative, and that's all that class provided. Tech Op worked the same way. They gave you a minor little, here's this little bonus because this is your focus. But the big thing in the system was you had character points. They called them advancement points, but basically character points that you spent on skills. And the cost of the skills was determined by your class, meaning a combat specialist, martial arts, powered melee weapons, power armor. Those skills were a little cheaper for you. As a diplomat, negotiation and that type of stuff was cheaper for you. If you were a free agent, things like security, which was lockpicking, was cheaper for you. But it did not mean you could not put points into power armor, even if you were the diplomat.
Yeah, you just have to, you know, balance, you know, where you want to put those points. I mean, if you want to do that, sure, you can. Just try not to disregard the other things that your class is known for.
Right. And as you leveled up, you got more skill points. So I can't remember it off the top of my head, but I think it was 7. It took 7 experience points to get to level 2, which meant you got 7 advancement points to spend when you got to level 2. To get from level 2 to level 3, it took 8 this time, and so on. Each time it took 1 more point than it did previously, but you started over on the gaining XP track. So, you know, you got your 7, it was reset to 0, you had to get 8, it would get reset to 0, but you got more and more skill points each time you leveled. So each time you leveled, it took longer, but when you did it, you had more to spend on stuff. And you could spend it on skills, and you could spend it on basically talents or feats, as we'd call them today. They're not overpowering and system-breaking like they were, but they were good things. And here's one place where your profession did make a difference. That's what they called the classes, is stat boosts. Over the course of your character's career, every one of your stats could be increased by a maximum of 2 points. When you could do this, though, the earliest level you could increase it by its first point, and then the earliest level you could increase it by its second point, varied depending on your profession. A combat specialist can improve their strength earlier than a free agent could improve their strength. But they could still improve their strength a total of 2 times. It just had to wait till a later level.
But then again, even if we're talking about the stat boost, there would be, you know, other things you'd have to worry about, such as the caps for the species.
Well, yes. In this system, humans had a stat range of 4 to 14. If you were someone who liked to roll dice and do it random rolls, you would roll 2d6 plus 2 for your stats. Random rolls, though, was an optional way of doing it, and that's the way I personally preferred it because I grew up on older systems that were, you know, random rolled stats. But you could also do it as a point buy for the stats as well. And yes, the non-human species also had their minimum and maximum stat caps, which meant that if you put too many points into one of your stats, you wouldn't have been able to boost it later, so you could use those advancement points on something else, but really it was generally a better option to do it during character, you know, stat boosting and not put all those points in at the beginning, so you were a little bit better balanced. The reason for that is all of your skills were based on your stats. I'll give you an example. You wanted to smack someone with a sword. Well, that's a melee weapon, and that's a strength-based skill. So your basic to hit someone with, if you don't have any points in the skill category or the skill itself, is half your strength. You need to roll half your strength or less on a d20 with a d4 penalty because you don't have the skill. If you have the general category that the melee skill's under, basically, I think it was unarmed combat or something like that, in that situation, you'd roll under your full strength with a d4 penalty. But if you had any points in melee weapons, then it was however many ranks you had in there plus your strength, and that's what you were trying to get under on a d20. And because of that, it meant that you really wanted to have all your stats fairly decent, that way all your skills were, you know, not too bad. And this system, unlike D&D, had built-in success levels right there on the character sheet. When you filled it all out, you wrote down, you know, modern weapon ranged is the category, and you took pistol for the specific skill, and you had 4 ranks in it. Cool. So it's your dex plus 4, that's your base success. half of that is a good success and half of that is an amazing success or a crit. Unlike D&D or other games, a crit doesn't mean you just do double. No, no, no. They actually had in the weapon stats, this is the damage it does on a normal, this is what it does on a good, and this is what it does on an amazing. It was all pre-calculated for you. So it was really easy and quick in play.
Yes, I certainly do remember that. Let's see, in the game that we had, I know my doctor ended up dealing some pretty nasty damage by accidentally critting on a punch.
Well, yeah.
And unarmed attack, I should say.
Well, and it also helped that your health was broken into different categories. You had stun, wound, and mortal. If you took even 1 point of mortal damage, your character was technically dying. They weren't unconscious and definitely and out of the fight unless they were out of mortal, at which point they were dead. But if they took any, they had to make a test to make sure to see if they stayed conscious. And if you'd taken even 1 point of mortal damage until you had received surgery, your character would slowly lose points of mortal as they were basically bleeding out.
Yes, and that was partially why I made sure that I was the team doctor.
It's also why you like to wear armor, why you tried not to get shot, and why you made sure that if you were going to get into a fight, you ambushed them. You didn't do a fair fight. Also, unlike other games, doesn't matter what level you are. Your health is not based on your level. Your wounds and your stun are equal to your character's endurance stat. Your mortal is half of that. And that's it. It does not go up unless your endurance goes up. And initiative in Alternative Old was probably one of the more unique ones I've seen out there. Just like with your skills, your character had, they didn't call it initiative, but that's what it was. And it was broken down the same way. An ordinary, a good, and an amazing number. Whichever one you, with the lowest one you rolled under, was the first phase in combat you got to act. And the number of attacks or actions you could take in a combat round was determined based on your character's dex and I believe it was intelligence. Based on those, it determined how many you had. Most people only had two. But if you blew that roll and rolled above your ordinary, you went on the marginal phase. You can only take one action per phase, so you lost one of your actions.
All the more reason you wanted to have those stats up.
Or you wanted to stack the bonuses so you had, you know, had an easier roll, too. And that's the other thing. As I said, you're rolling under on a d20. Unlike D&D, even today, it wasn't a d20 plus or minus anything, ever. If you had a bonus of 1, if you had a 1-step bonus, you rolled a d20 minus a d4. If it was 2 steps, it was a d20 minus a d6. There was a chart you looked at, and it told you if you're you looked at whatever your total bonus or total penalty was, and it told you what die you rolled with it, and you either added or subtracted it from the d20 to determine the number. So a penalty was added.
But it was like that with all of the skills. You would always be rolling the 2 different dice to see.
Unless there was no modifier, depending in which on case.
I mean, in most cases, there would be a modifier to speak of. I mean, whether it was, from the conditions or your skills in general.
Right. Well, your skills didn't give you a modifier, but weather patterns, lighting.
Well, at certain levels, levels didn't, some of these skills actually provide bonuses to other skills.
Not generally. Some of the species, like Tassa, had a 1-step bonus on jury rigging. Combat specialists, like I said, could pick a weapon type to get a 1-step bonus, period.
I mean, I seem to recall that, like, with my doctor, if I had a certain degree of ranks in xenomedicine, it would give me bonuses on treatment of them, or at the very least, reduction of penalties.
Reduction of penalty. It did not give you an actual bonus. It just reduced the penalty for treating another species. Which is realistic. I mean, a human doctor trying to treat some little, hyperactive reptile critter, gonna have some issues.
Yeah.
But everything worked that way. It did have a few weird quirks, like its love of using dice for everything. For example, armor did not make you harder to hit. Armor reduced the damage you took. But armor had three ratings. Low impact, punches, kicks, swords. High impact, bullets. And energy, ray guns, lasers, you know, that sort of thing. And it had a die associated with it, or dice, depending on how good the armor was. So it was variable how much damage it could stop.
And just because you were protected from one type of energy didn't mean you were going to be protected from the others.
Yeah, armor usually was, like, good against one thing and kind of bad against the other two categories. So it was kind of, what do you think you're going to run into? And what can you afford? Vehicles and starships worked on the exact same principle. The only difference is starships, every person on the ship had something viable they could do in combat. Your guy sitting at the communications council, he could not just open comm lines, he could hack into another ship's computer and mess up its targeting.
I think we did have, you know, some form of space combat in that game. I was pretty sure we did.
Yeah, the one that had the most space combat that I had to run was in college, and they really enjoyed it there. I didn't get to run it too much afterwards, but it was there. It was nice. It was fun to use. But it is a niche thing that not everyone is into. Now, there was one real unbalanced problem with the system, if you consider this sort of thing a problem. And that was the tech op profession.
In what way?
Well, you know how I said when you level up, you know, these professions all give you like a small little something, but it wasn't, you know, really game changing. Tech ops got extra advancement points to spend on skills, talents, and stuff, which didn't seem like much, but over multiple levels, kind of made them slightly overpowered compared to the other characters.
And it also depended on what level you're talking about, you know, for the actual points. I mean, if you're just changing to 2 to 5, that was an extra point per level. But you get higher than that, you get 2 points per level, or even higher than that, 3, 4, 5 points per level. So yeah, that could, you know, quickly add up.
Well, it's not the per level. I mean, even from 2 to 5, you're talking 3 levels there. That's 3 extra points. That's an extra rank in most skills. Which doesn't sound like a lot, but when you're talking, these skills are on a base 20. A single rank is a 5% increase in success.
And then it also depends on, you know, what the character is going to be using those points for.
Well, yeah.
Some of these people, you're going to have to spread them out a lot.
Well, yeah. But like I said, I mean, it meant that Tech Ops had the potential to be more powerful than the other characters, depending on how they were played. The real idea was it's a tech system. It has a large number of skills. The thought was a tech op would probably be spending on a lot of different technical, medical, engineering, and so on skills, and needed the extra points because they wouldn't have them to put into combat that other people could because their focus was more narrow.
And let's also not forget that being the tech op probably ended up putting, you know, quite a few points into the intelligence, and that directly would also, you know, translate into more points for the skills.
Only at character creation.
Yes. But still, having those points right at the very get-go, it kind of ties in with the bonus points later, too.
Yes, it does. People who played Mindwalkers, they had to actually spread their points, their stat points, out quite a bit. Because different psychic abilities were based on different stats. So if they made a dump stat, then there was a definite category of psychic ability they kind of sucked at, no matter what they did.
Not going to lie, I didn't really pay all that much attention to the psionics, but I didn't feel that we were going to be using those, so I didn't figure I needed to.
Yep, and right in the core game, you also had rules for mutants, which were interesting, because there was a table you'd roll on, and it would tell you, cool, you have X number of ordinary, good, amazing, or mix of those abilities, but you also have an amazing, we'll say, or a couple of ordinary deficiencies. And these could be quite fun. We had a mutant in college who was quicker. That was his advantage, made him faster, better initiative. His disadvantage, though, was he kind of shocked people who touched him, and he passed out a lot.
Yeah, if I had known about the mutants the first time we played, I probably would have considered going that route. Because I took a look at some of the stuff, and that just seems fun.
Yes, and then also on top of that, you even had rules in there for cybernetics. Were interesting because you had a limit on how much you could stick in your body. It was a cyber tolerance score.
But on the upside, some of those cybernetics, I believe those could potentially take a character above their max stat.
Technically, yes. So between, like I said, the game had everything in there. It had the skills, it had space combat, it had regular combat, it had computer hacking, which was kind of difficult to deal with. It had mutants, it had psychics, it had cybernetics. It covered everything for sci-fi. And there were expansion books, one that expanded heavily on psionics, one that was for FX abilities. This allowed you to bring in characters who had magic or religious, you know, priestly powers from the god or gods they worshipped. It also had in their powers for playing characters you'd find in comic books, you know, like superhuman strength type or flying.
Oh.
And it had a profession in there for this type of class of character, which was interesting because they didn't just do it as a generic one. They did it where it could be used generic, but it had parts in there that were specifically for their primary setting, Star Drive. And at first, most people were like, wait, why is there magic in Star Drive? That doesn't make sense. But if you were the GM, you...
Oh, sure, it does. I mean,
really,
magic could easily be, you know, classified as, you know, technology that you just don't understand.
Oh, no. This was actual magic with you using spells and magic ability granted to you by, like, a Cthulhu-type entity. And if you were the GM, you were privy to the knowledge that, yes, this was actually something in the Star Drive universe and was actually behind one of the major plot events that occurs about 3 to 4 years into the overall meta.
Oh.
Unfortunately, Wizards of the Coast canceled the line early, and they weren't able to fully develop it, so they kind of rushed the beginning of that, and it never got properly introduced to everybody. But it was a secret that was slowly being, that as you played through, if your character was paying attention and could start to pick up little hints and inklings of this being there throughout the course of the gameplay. And it doesn't necessarily mean things your character did themselves. If your GM actually presented to the characters the news articles that came out, because there were news articles dated in-universe, and if they read through those news articles and were a conspiracy type, they could start to go, wait a minute, this is, something's wrong.
Yeah, makes me wish that our campaign went on for longer, but...
It happens. Now, like I said, this was a great game that was out then. In 2017, some of the guys who were involved in the original Alternity ran a Kickstarter for a new version of Alternity. They said up front they wouldn't be able to do Star Drive or any of the IP stuff because they didn't have access to it. It was still owned by Wizards of the Coast. But it's Alternity. These are the guys who wrote it. They're talking about the same core mechanic concept. You roll a d20. Plus an extra die based on your bonus or penalty. We all thought, excellent, it's coming back. We love this. And
yeah, both you and I backed that, and, well, you were not impressed.
Nope. I backed it. I talked a bunch of people into backing it. I'm still waiting on one of the books that has not released as of yet. They have... apparently fired the freelancer who was writing it for the third time and are now writing it in-house. after it was 80% done back in 2018. It's now 2021, and they started their third rewrite in, like, almost 4 months ago. Oh, and these are digest-sized books, and they're digest-sized, and the books are about, you know, they're a little under 100 pages, digest-sized, single column. So they're really not that long.
What can I really say? Some of the stuff you back on Kickstarter.
Yeah. Now, the core mechanic is still the same. You roll a d20, and then you roll a modifying die based on how much of a bonus or penalty you have. That's cool. The initiative got changed up a bunch. Health got changed up, but they're not things that broke it for me. What broke it for me is the amount of stuff that's missing, and characters. So,
what do you mean?
All right. So it's a science fiction game. All right. So what would you expect to find in a sci-fi game?
Oh, I'd say, you know, various alien species, you know, futuristic tech.
In the core, there's no cybernetics. There's no mutants. There's no rules on how to do starships. Psionics are covered briefly. They went with the more modern thing of trying to go with a short skill list to keep things concise. And your character doesn't take a profession. Your character chooses an archetype to get started. Okay? The archetypes are the battler, expert, leader, striker, survivor. Kind of flavorless sounding.
Yes, those really don't tell me all that much. I mean, sure, you got the battler and you got the leader.
Skills are broken into five categories. There are attack skills, defensive skills, technical skills, social skills, and environmental skills. Who do you think would get the most skill points to put into attack skills?
Well, based on the names, I would say either the battler or the striker.
Incorrect. Everyone gets the same number of skill points to put into each of the categories.
Mm-hmm.
No matter which archetype you choose, you have 4 points for each category, and then you have 15 points to spend how you wish.
Okay, well, are any of these archetypes limited on the types of skills that they can choose to invest in?
No.
No. So does that mean that any archetype can effectively build itself like any of the other archetypes?
Correct. The only place they change is in the talent. When they start, they pick a talent, and they have a limited list of talents that they can choose from at character creation. After that, they can choose any talent, including ones that were not on their initial list.
Wow.
And effectively, now it's not 100%. I think there's one talent that does not fit this. But in general, any talent that you look at on the list is a combat-based talent.
Huh?
Yep.
You mean almost that any skill could potentially be used in combat, or...
No. Skills are one thing. You have skills and talents, basically feats. And all of the talents, feats, whatever you want to call them, are basically combat feats. Like you'd expect in D&D.
Okay. So, you know, never mind any of those talents that might reflect to anyone who would want to go into a more technical field.
Correct. Now, you think, well, it's science fiction, and... it covers, you know, from prehistoric to super high tech. It's got to have a huge range of, like, weapons and armor, right?
I'm going to guess you're going to say no.
It's got a list of melee weapons that's shorter than D&D.
Okay.
And if the weapon you're using is of a lower tech level than the armor you're wearing, it takes all kinds of penalties to action. So, by the rules as they're written, or if you buy a short sword, it's tech level 2. No matter what tech level you're at that you bought it, its materials are never better than tech level 2.
That's disappointing.
Yeah. Basically, they're saying if you bought a weapon developed in the Bronze Age, it's going to be made of bronze, even if you're in a far future with super advanced material technology and they could have made it out of something else and had it still be the same sword. Yes, there might be some inherent limitations in a pistol, but the ammo you're firing out of that pistol could be higher tech and... But nope, that's not in the rules. Doesn't work that way. Those are the types of things that make my... That just killed me on the game.
Okay, I have this really high-tech grenade, and I fire it out of something lower-tech. Does that mean it does the lower-tech damage?
Well,
or would that actually be the actual grenade damage?
You're talking about a grenade launcher, basically, right? The damage it does is based on the grenade. So that one, it's the ammo. But your rifles, your pistols, they are locked in at whatever tech they were made.
Okay.
So, hey, cool, you got a heavy pistol. It's tech level 6. Congratulations. Doesn't matter, you can't find, ammo with an explosive warhead that brings it up to like a tech 7 or something. Nope, doesn't exist. Sorry, can't do it. Ha ha. Yeah, everyone's good at combat, no matter what they are. Your equipment list is extremely limited. You have no starship rules to speak of. You have no real vehicle rules to speak of. You have no cybernetics. You have a very poorly done psionic. You have no mutants, and it's supposed to be alternity.
I think I'll just stick with the older one.
Yeah. And people tried going, well, what'd you expect? I mean, it's only 290 pages. Well, the other one was a player's book and a GM's book. Obviously. Well, then why'd you make it this digest size 290 page book? Why didn't you do something more extensive when you're trying to be alternity? And instead of just cutting everything out because we're going with a small book and limited page count, we'll do more. We did a Kickstarter. You raised a crap ton more than what you were aiming for.
Maybe they should have read a stretch goal there. Hit this point. We'll give you a better book.
Yeah. And their two campaign settings they released are called mission guides. They've got like maybe 15, 20 pages of setting in the very beginning. And the rest of it is like 6 adventures that are fairly generic set in the setting. That's your campaign setting.
I mean, I suppose you could build off of that, but...
But you're trying to launch a new version of Alternity, a new product line. Why go small like this? Why, when you ran the Kickstarter, did you do, hey, here's this bundle. You can get everything if you do a $150 pledge, which is not as much as some Kickstarters, but that's what it is, which works out to like, I think, $20-$25 per book. And they list the books as being like $25 a piece on the back cover. But all of them, except for the core, are print on demand. They're all PODs that you can buy from drive-thru cheaper than the retail price on the back of the book.
I mean, was it just a case of, trying to make money off of nostalgia?
And that's all I can think of. It's super disappointing. I'm going to leave it there. It is not the Alternity I came to love and what we came to talk about tonight game-wise. Now, back to Alternity proper. As I mentioned earlier, and as Andy knows, they have the Star Drive setting, which I think is just excellent for a space opera type game with a slight military spin to it, some free trader work, just covers everything. It's beautiful. Again, it does have some issues because of the fact that it's from 1999. Its tech is a bit dated, and you can feel it. The other setting they did was called Dark Matter, which they also released for D20 Modern. And that is basically an X-Files type setting.
Now, would we be talking present day, or?
Present day as of the late 90s.
Yes.
And when it came out, it also had some interesting things. One of the adventures out there, in the book, there was a web link that the characters could, you know, a web address the characters could come across during their investigation. And you could actually go on the computer, put that link in, and it would take you to additional information on the adventure that your characters could learn.
Okay.
Obviously, that's all defunct now, but it was cool stuff then.
Yeah, I could see that.
So you have that one. And those were the two settings they released for it. They did do one other thing for Alternity at the time that was a box set. It was by itself. It was kind of poorly done, but they were trying to cash in on popularity of that particular IP at the time, which was the Alternity rules to have you play in, I'm trying to even remember what it was called. It was from the same guys that do Warcraft, but it was their sci-fi real-time strategy
StarCraft.
Game. Yes. I'm sorry. I was thinking Warcraft. That's why but I said StarCraft, which is what I meant. Cool. Yes. Or did I say? Yeah, whatever. You got it right. StarCraft.
I played a little bit of that game.
Okay. But their Dark Matter setting was really kind of cool. I'm not a huge fan of modern day investigative quasi horror alien stuff, but there were some neat things in it. It really covers what I wanted to hit on Alternity about tonight. Did you have any other thoughts or?
Well, I mean, I certainly like the different species that you had involved in Alternity. I mean, you had the Frail, you know, kind of what a lot of people might actually think of in terms of an aliens, you know, tall, thin, big eyes. And then you also psychic. Have the one psychic too, yes. And then you have the Mechalis, which are, you know, kind of like humans, but, you know, they kind of adapted, you know, machinery into their bodies. So I'm like, also born, like that.
They're born with cybernetic implants. Yeah. Also, if I remember right in the storyline, their world and another world are really close together. They both had sentient species, and they annihilated the other one and kind of started introducing the cybernetic stuff and getting away from their emotions as a penance for the evil they had committed.
Well, that and, you know, they started becoming, you know, more towards the pacifists because, yeah, they had that really, really bad reaction to, you know, whole, you know, genocide thing.
Right, and humanity discovers them. They're advanced, but they're not spacefaring. Humanity is. The Frail or Frail, I forget. The tall, gangly dudes.
Mm-hmm.
They've been watching us for a while, and they were with us when we developed. They actually revealed themselves to us, and the two of us worked together to develop FTL Travel. So they're long-term friends and allies and high-tech with us.
Yep, and then you have the scaly boys that saw.
Yes, who are excellent. They're the only other species we had encountered up to the start of the Star Drive campaign, anyway, with an interstellar nation. They had multiple planets they had colonized. They did not have faster light travel, so they were doing it through old-fashioned, slow-moving cryo ships.
But then you also had on the other end of the spectrum the more primitives. You got the Wearin, which are, you know, kind of your Chewbaccas out there.
Oh, yeah, if Chewie was A, not a tree dweller, B, had chameleon-like fur, C, was allowed to use his claws in combat happily, and basically operated as a warrior poet with a giant musket.
And then you had the Shishayans, I believe. Those were the ones with the wings that...
The six-eyed, bat-winged freaks who lived in the dark and were nothing more than hunter-gatherers, yeah.
Yes, and if I remember correctly, they were kind of under one company of humans that, you know, found them and...
The Stellar Nation in Star Drive, known as Void Corp, is the one that discovered the Shishaya, discovered these bat-winged freaks. And in Void Corp, you don't have a name. You have a corporate ID number, and they basically were... They signed away their freedom, not knowing what they were doing, and now they are corporate drones. The only time you see them outside of Void Corp, you can pretty much bet they're either a assassin or an intelligence operative of Void Corp.
Yes. You actually, you know, Bait essentially made that disclaimer right when we started that one campaign, saying that, yeah, if you do this, you are kind of, you know, stuck in this position, and you're probably not going to want to actually choose that.
I'm not going to stop you from playing something that you want to, but I want you aware of the situation, yeah.
Yes. But no, at the time, I was happy choosing my Mechalus.
Yep.
My Mechie Techie Doctor.
And you know what I find odd is that even though the Batwinged Freaks were hunter-gatherer primitives, they have no problem with technology. Where our big, burly warrior guys who are poets, they have the primitive flaw and have all kinds of penalties when working with any high-tech stuff.
Well, what can I say? I'm sure their hair just gets into everything.
Well, also it could be the fact that the Stellar Nation that found them is religious, like super religious and pacifistic. And also make the best FTL engines in all of human-controlled space.
Let's see, I think in that brief session that we had, I did actually attempt to play a Warren, and that particular thing, you can actually buy out of the...
You can buy a 1 point reduction during character creation, and you can buy a 1 point reduction during play. So if you buy the one during character creation, then yes, you can eliminate it completely during play. If you do not buy that reduction during character creation, you can never get rid of it fully.
Yes. I made sure I took that. I bought that right at the start because of that.
Well, I mean, they got to try and offset the fact that these guys, A, are harder to hit in ranged combat. B, they have more health than everyone else just because they're so burly. C, because they're strong, they're also harder to hit in melee. Oh, that's the thing. In Alternity, if your stats are high, you give penalties to people doing stuff to you. So if you have a high strength, people have a penalty attacking you with swords, fists, what have you, just because you're strong. Not that unreasonable. If you have a high dex, people have a hard time shooting you because you move around too much.
Well, and then again, some of this stuff is also a combination of two stats. Where some of these attributes, you'll have to, you know, take this stat and this stat, add them together, and divide them by two. So that, if, you know, you slouched on one of those.
Well, that was only for determining number of actions per round and movement speed. Things like the resistance modifiers were directly just a single stat.
Oh, yes, the resistance mods. Those were single stats, but...
Which is what I was talking about.
I thought there were a couple of other things that fell into that category.
So yeah, your resistance modifiers. And you had resistance modifiers for strength, dex, basically attacking in melee, getting attacked in melee and getting shot at, as well as your willpower, and I think it was your charisma, might have been intelligence, which affected people trying to manipulate you.
Hmm. That's something we haven't covered yet. The last resort points.
Which were, people didn't use those very often, and there was a good reason for it, but they were good. They were kind of like your fate points or character points, things you could spend to save your arse in a situation. The number you could have was based off of a stat.
Yep, that was what, personality?
Correct, which you didn't have charisma, you had personality. And yes, it was personality determined how many you could have at most and how many advancement points it cost you to buy a new one to replace any you had spent.
Yes.
Which is why people didn't typically use them, because using them...
It was going to cost you.
Yeah, your character was going to be weaker long-term if you used them.
I mean, granted, if you had your personality to 13 or 14, Then, okay, sure, you could have three at a time, and it would only take you 1 point to get each one back. But still, if you have to use them all the time, then, oh, wow, you're going to find yourself, falling behind everyone pretty quickly.
Correct. But the system did not have a level cap. Really, as long as you could get through those earlier levels, things typically got a little easier for you as your skills improved. And that was it. It was the name of the game was how good were you at what you were doing? Not what level were you? What was your skill level? That was the important part, especially when you added in rank benefit, which we didn't cover. So remember how I mentioned before, early on, you could buy ranks into a skill, which increased your base, which you had to roll under.
Mm-hmm.
Well, every so many ranks you purchased with some skills, you got a rank benefit, like a bonus to your defense or the ability to attack a second time with a sword or various things like that.
Well, I mean, it's like how I did mention before with the case of xenomedicine and, the resulting effect on, any treatment checks for those species.
Correct. And that was one of the nice things was as your skill improved, not only were you more likely to succeed at it, but you also got side benefits with it, too. Like I said, it was a complex system, but all the complexity really occurred during character creation and leveling up because there was space on your character sheet to record everything. And as long as you wrote it all down, all your numbers were pre-calculated, and you just had to roll the die, look at the page, and go, I did it.
And I did it this well.
Yep. Or I screwed the pooch.
Yeah, and let's face it, there was always that possibility that you rolled that 20 on the main die.
But there was always that... But, the die rolls were always there for some fun, and alien artifacts were also a fun variable, too.
Someone had one of those in the games, I think. I mean, never got it sorted about what it was.
Yep. I have never run a game of Alternity and not had at least one player spend the points to get an alien artifact or receive the points to get an alien artifact.
Yes.
So you could buy talents and flaws during character creation. Buying a talent cost you X number of character points or advancement points, whatever you want to call it. Flaws gave you points. Alien artifacts could be taken as either a perk or a flaw. And if you took it as a flaw, it would have more negatives than bonuses, but it would still have something positive about it.
Just like how if you, use the points to get it, it would have a lot of positives, but there also would be the negatives.
But fewer negatives.
Yes.
In the college campaign, our mutant had spent the maximum points to start with an artifact that when I rolled its form turned out to be an archaic weapon, so we went with a sword. I forget what its drawback was offhand, but its perk was if he made a will feat check, meaning he rolled a d20 and he got his will or lower, he could activate a luck bonus that gave a massive bonus to whatever his roll was, which allowed him to basically get an amazing success firing a vehicle-mounted gun when he had no skill in that category at all.
And he did that with a sword.
He activated the luck power of this alien artifact that was shaped like a sword.
Okay. Okay, so you're saying that that was just the luck that he activated from it, and how he used the luck was up to him.
You activate the luck to basically for your next roll. So he's like, I'm going to try and, use the luck ability on my blade because I need to take out this tank that's coming at us. And okay. All I've got is this cannon that I've got no skill in.
All right.
So instead of rolling a d20 plus a d4 and trying to get under a 6, he ended up rolling a d20 minus a d20 and ended up with a result of 1.
Yeah, I would typically leave those kind of things to the other people, though. Let them roleplay that.
Well, yeah. like I said, I can't remember what its penalty was, but its penalty that it had, the drawback was also kind of nasty. I think the drawback was something like it ate a wound worth of health per day or something.
Ooh.
So he was constantly having to receive medical attention to stay healthy.
Yeesh,
yes, but when you also have the ability to, like, I'm just going to succeed at
have you. No, I get that, but still, it's like, okay, every time you draw this sword right here, you're actually going to cut yourself with it.
Granted. One last thing I want to leave everyone on. This is a skill I think every game ever should have. Nice little catch-all skill, Daredevil. Yes, folks, he has his copy of the book and he's looking it up.
Let's see, Daredevil. This specialty skill enables a hero to improve his ability to perform high-risk activities such as skydiving, scuba diving, hang gliding, surfing, bungee jumping, and whitewater rafting. The outcome of a Daredevil attempt is determined by a skill check. On a critical failure, the attempted action fails and the character could suffer stun or wound damage at the GM's discretion. This outcome generally involves bad luck concerning some aspect of the equipment being used. Scuba diving gear springs a leak, parachute fails, etc. See, on a failure, attempted action doesn't succeed, but the character does not necessarily suffer damage. Parachute goes drastically off course. And lands in a long distance from his target, perhaps taking damage as well. Ordinary success, the character is basically able to perform the action. He can manipulate a hang glider so it stays aloft, but he has no control over his direction of travel.
So, yeah, it's a Daredevil thing. It's the skill where if you're in a fantasy game and you want to play Legolas riding a shield down the stairs, roll a Daredevil check.
Okay. See, on an amazing success, everything goes right. He rides the raft all the way through the rapids without damage to himself or his equipment. So, yep. You know.
The movie Twister. You want to drive your truck through the house that's rolling across the road? Roll a Daredevil.
And cross your fingers.
Yeah, it's the skill that you see every 80s action movie guy use at some point.
Yeah, that certainly is a fairly nice catch-all for those situations.
You know, it's really, the name of it is kind of self-explanatory once you give it a little thought. You're like, oh,
yeah,
okay.
I mean, granted, if, you know, were to take that away, you could, you know, do those other things with other skills. I mean, for the example of your, you know, driving the vehicle through the house, I mean, okay, you have your vehicles test that you'd want to be doing for that. And, you know, maybe a secondary skill check if, you know...
You're trying to drive a vehicle through a house, you're going to have massive penalties. You say, I'm going to drive the vehicle through the house and I'm going to roll Daredevil. As a GM, I'm going to go for it.
Yes, it's certainly, you know, a cleaner option.
It's that I'm going to do something that this skill is not intended for, but it's psychotic and cool. Oh, wait, I have Daredevil. Can I use that? Okay.
I think I may have been overlooking that one. May have been overlooking that one for the previous attempts.
Oh, a lot of people do. You know.
But to be fair, it probably wouldn't have, you know, fit my doctor.
True. I think my favorite failure of a Daredevil skill check in a movie would have been... I'm trying to remember the name of the movie now. It was the one with the dragons in the modern day that came back. They'd wiped out pretty much everything except...
Rain of Fire?
Yes.
Oh.
Yeah, where the guy grabs the axe and he leaps at the dragon's head and it just eats him. He rolled Daredevil and failed.
I'd say crit failed.
Yeah, that was, oops, yeah, the good roll.
You know what? You tried, and that's all we can say, sorry.
You've been listening to a couple of guys babble about an old game they love and the new abomination that tried to use the name. And this is Nate signing off.
Okay. See ya.
And you were listening to Violence Solves Everything, an RPG podcast. Thanks for listening, and we'll catch you again next month.
Now it is time for you to go away.